It's time for the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. Sit back, relax, find your favourite campy chair, and join us around the fire. From wherever you're listening around the world, welcome to Australia's favourite board gaming podcast. The Board Game Barbecue, brought to you by addicts, not experts. Hi there, welcome to episode 165 of the Board Game Barbecue Podcast, coming to you live from all over this nation. And I'm joined by two fantastic individuals. Firstly, we have Delicious Dan. How are you doing?
Ooh, delicious. I was wondering what you're going to throw. I'm very well, Steve. How are you, mate?
I'm excellent. And, of course, if I'm throwing out adjectives, I've got one mic. I'm back in form. And this is a good one. I'm really proud of this one.
I'm waiting. Don't disappoint me.
It's mouth-watering mic.
Yes, I will take it. And I agree. I'm also delicious, but mouth-watering works as well. G'day, mate.
So that is the crew for tonight. We're going to talk about some board games, surprise, surprise, some sizzling games. We're going to talk about what you do when you go on holidays. It's the holiday season at the moment. How do you pack your games? What games do you take? What are some good strategies we have in place for things like that, or some ideas? And then, of course, we'll revisit the bracket battle that we set up on the last episode, and then we'll swear some O's. And spoiler alert, we're recording this literally 24 hours after the last episode was recorded, and Dan and I were both on that episode. So I don't know about you, Dan, but I haven't had time to fill my three oaths that I had on the last episode 24 hours ago.
Scratch myself. Less of a spoiler, more of a caveat to just be prepared to be disappointed when we get to the end of the show.
Mike is definitely flying the flag for the oath segment tonight.
Mate, someone's got to.
I'm going to add another oath. It's a doozy as well. More to come.
Yeah, that's right. Because if we can't succeed, make it harder.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's get straight into it with some games. Mike, start us off. What have you been playing, mate?
So I touched on it a little bit on the last episode, but I wanted to do it some more justice. I would like to sizzle Cryo. Man, Cryo, it just really tickled my fancy. It's just got so many cool elements and some of those really awesome differences to your typical worker placement game that I felt I wanted to talk about a little bit more. So Cryo in all its Luke Glory goodness. It was Luke Glory and Tom Jolly. They made this really awesome game. And what I mentioned last time is the first thing that catches you at this game is just the color palette they've chosen to go with. It's got these really cool purples and greens and blues, and they're sort of pastel colors, which you don't really see too often, and some colors next to each other they don't normally see together. Like, it just looks really, really pretty. Your workers are drones that you're flying around, and they're nicely brightly colored and really cool little minis as well. And what you're sort of trying to work with in the game, you've got little cryostasis pods that are scattered all over the board that you're trying to save. So it's just got lots of pretty colors and looks quite busy on the board. And the idea of the game is that, you know, you're all flying through space and some sabotage has taken place and your ship has crash landed on an alien planet. And it's a very, very cold, icy planet, which is slowly coming to the end of its day. And once the sun goes down, everyone's going to freeze to death. So what you want to do is use your drones to gather some resources and build some makeshift ships. So that way we can send our guys in the cryostasis pods down to underground caverns closer to the core of the earth to stay warm, and anyone that doesn't make it there doesn't survive. So this game is sort of broken up into three spots. It's mostly a worker placement game, and once you save your pods, the little caverns underneath the earth, it's a bit of a area control game, and your platform or dock station where your workers go to rest is like a little engine builder. And I'll sort of start with that. When you move your drones around the board to go into your worker placement spots, the first thing that's a really big difference is that most of your worker placement spots have four options that you can choose. There's, you know, up, down, left, and right, and you can choose any of those options that you want to activate. One of those things that you're going to activate is taking a little piece that you can put into your platform, and that piece is generally a resource. In the game, you're working gathering minerals for the most part, so you're gathering crystals, tech, organics, and nanites, Nanites are a wild resource and needed for a few other things in the game. And you're also collecting energy. But basically, you can pick up these little tokens, put them on your platform underneath one of your drones. And what that means is that when you return your drone, when you return your workers, if you land on that platform that has that little token there, you're going to generate that resource. And that's like the sort of first one out of like six sort of spots your workers can go in. You land and you can generate a resource. After that, it might be the token that you put in might represent what you're exchanging for another resource. So, for example, if I want to save one of my guys from the board, one of my little stasis pods, I can put in a gem token in a slot on my platform, and it'll actually translate to, if I land here, I can spend a gem to save one of my guys, or I can spend a gem to draw a card in the game. There's all like little combos you can do, and I find that really fun in the game because the game plays out very, very quickly. So there's not a lot of time to gather resources. So wasting your time landing on platforms and taking these tokens can seem like a waste of time, but if you do it early in the game, every time you return your workers and you're landing your workers onto your own platform, you're generating a bunch of resources, which is really, really handy. The aim of the game, once again, is to move your pods into the underground cavern. The underground cavern is mostly actually face-down tiles, which you want to expose. So there is an action in the game called Scout Action, which you actually place a worker there, spend some resources, and send one of your cryostasis pods into a covered underground cavern. And that's where you actually sort of flip over the tile, put your guy in there, and you sort of start your area control under the ground. It's a very, very interesting game because of those sort of three sort of main mechanics working together. It is really interesting because you're trying to manage three different things at once, and I found it a really, really good sort of puzzle. In the game, you also have these little tokens. There's sort of four main areas on the board where you're sort of placing your workers, and each one at the top has a token, and it's called an incident token. And that most of the time is maybe taking a resource. So after I will return my workers, I have to take an incident token, and that is most likely going to be gathering a resource. Other than resource tokens, which are your sort of looting option, you can also do a sabotage. If I take a sabotage token, I actually place it on an area that holds all the cryostasis pods, and I'll actually eliminate all the pods in that area. So as the game sort of counts down, you're actually knocking everybody's workers out of their place and giving them less options. So halfway through the game, most of your workers have been killed if you haven't saved them yet. So it becomes really, really interesting and a bit of a race against time. I also love the cards in this game. If you haven't played it yet, the cards are sort of like a multi-use card where you can take an action to play a card, and that card can either be used as a mission, which is like an end-of-game point system. So if I achieve this, I'll get this many points into the game, and that remains secret. You can use it as an upgrade where you tuck it under your board at the top, and it's a ability you have continuing throughout the game, sort of like... It reminded me of Whistle Mountain, where you sort of have a new rule for yourself that you can sort of break the game a little bit. Or you can create a new ship, and the ship sort of sit under your board, and you can place your little cryo chambers onto the ships and use the ships to send a bunch of them down into the underground caverns. It just all worked really, really well together. It, like I said, it took maybe about an hour and 20 minutes to play, I think. It wasn't a very long game. And once again, you just never feel there's enough time or they have enough options. One thing I like as well, the game will always be a little bit different. They have these sort of tokens they can use to cover up worker placement spots, and each one has a symbol. So every time you play the game, you're going to take a few of these tokens and match up the symbols on the board, and it'll cover some worker placement spots, making them unavailable. So I think that's a bit interesting as well, that every time you play the game, it will be a little bit different.
So how does that work, Mike, with are you drawing cards at random?
No. So there's this, when you set up the game, there's these sort of tokens that look like your little platforms you land your guys on. Yeah. And they sort of look like they're crossed out in a way. On the other side, they have symbols. So when I draw one, I look at the symbol and I look at the board to see which platform has that symbol, and I match them up. Right. You pop it on there, and that platform is now no longer usable in the rest of the game. But one of those special abilities you can get from those cards might be you can land on those platform areas. So you can land on areas nobody else can. So it's quite interesting. So I really did like this game. I'd like to play it a bit more. The one criticism one of my friends had about it, and I had to think about it, and he might be right, is that if you play the game a lot, there might not be enough in the game to make it too different every time. And if you played a lot, you might sort of be able to figure out the game and break the game a little bit. Look, more plays will probably tell that tale for me in time. I don't generally get to play my games back to back too often, so by the time I get back around to the game and I play it a few times, I don't think I'll really have that problem. But if you're the type of the person that sits down and plays a game over and over and over again, that might be the case. I'm not too sure. But I thought the game itself at the moment was really good, had a lot of fun, really tough decisions. Getting those resources means that the game was really, really tight. It even though I liked that a bunch of us had very different strategies we were going for, and the scores were still really close together. So it didn't really matter which sort of option you took, the scores still came together in the end. Have you had a chance to play this yet, Steve?
It's one of my current oaths to play this. It's one of my most anticipated games of 2021.
Yes.
And I hadn't completed the oath on the last episode, and as aforementioned, the 24-hour difference between the two means I potentially still haven't completed
okay.
that oath.
That's okay. Well, I really hope you like it, man, because it's a lot of fun. And it reminded me of Luke Laurie's other games, especially that whole returning your workers and that being an action itself and getting benefits. It did seem a lot thinkier. Like when I think of Dwellings of Eldervale, it's you're exploring and you're fighting people and it's a lot more interactive. Whistle Mountain, I was laughing the whole time and you're sort of breaking the game as you play. This one I felt was a bit more serious. I felt it was a lot tighter and, yeah, it wasn't as wacky and crazy. It still has some really cool functions in it. But the main time you're really interacting with people, I felt, was when you're choosing which incident token to take to destroy a bunch of pods in the area, which isn't always avoidable. Because resources are so tight, you usually want to take a resource because you probably really need it. But sometimes there's only 4 sabotage tokens on the board and you have to decide which area you're going to sabotage. You know, it happened a few times that I was really working hard to get the resources and land on the area I needed to save a couple of workers, a couple of the pods. But just before I got there, somebody else returned their workers, pulled out a sabotage token and took my workers out. So it has that potential to really ruin your plans halfway through the game. And then you have to quickly work out what you're going to do instead. You know, those missions, I think, really important. The missions on the card were really important. Because that gave me a bunch of points. If I didn't work towards those missions, I would have been way behind everybody else. And some people didn't even touch the mission. So like I said, you can play it a few different ways. But I'll definitely benefit with a few more plays under my belt. But look how beautiful it looks on the table. And it was a lot of fun and very thinky. I'm definitely hanging to play some more.
I remember this game came out late at our first Melbourne game day, or maybe it was that earlier and I didn't notice it, but I walked past it and just stopped. It struck me as I walked past and just went, what is that? Just the has really nice table presence.
Yeah.
I mean, the player boards, the double thickness recessed, everyone loves those. But in the little pieces, the crew pods and the cubes and stuff, they're just brilliant.
Oh, it looks fantastic.
Like, yeah, and as you mentioned as well, the art style is kind of like a comic booky sort of.
Do you know what I said? It reminds me of Daft Punk music videos. Have you ever watched them?
Right.
It's got that sort of cartoony,
there's but a selling not point.
Hyper realistic. I don't know, just the color scheme. I showed it to a mate of mine. I said, does this one remind you of Daft Punk? He goes, yeah, I see where you're going with that. Because it's cartoony, but this interesting kind of cartoony. I don't even know how to put it in words. It's got a very unique look to it. And that's the thing. Everyone I've spoken to about this game said, oh, was that at the Melbourne game day? Because they all walked past and noticed it straight away.
Yeah.
You could have walked past without noticing it. And when I found out it's a Luke Laurie game, like, well, I need this game. I don't care what it's about. I'll take two, you know? So I'm really happy it's in the collection. And it just makes me more excited to see what's coming next because they're all quite unique games, I feel, and I have a lot of fun with them. So I look forward to recruiting more of his games. I think I might have played, what's his first one?
The Manhattan Project.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've played it or not, so I want to give
Energy
that a
Empire,
go.
Empire, yeah.
Yeah, I want to give that
I've
a go.
I've got that coming soon, hopefully. Growl Games picked it up, so very happy.
Very nice.
Tell me, the thing that caught my eye about this game, well, not so much my eye, but my ears, I mentioned it when we were talking about our anticipated games, is that another person who is a regular at our Brisbane game days was talking about games, and he said, "Oh, I think the hobby's come a long way now, where you could even have someone who's never played board games before sit down and you could teach them a game like Cryo. And I was like, ooh, I didn't think that was gateway level. And listening to you talk about it, I feel like it probably isn't.
I wouldn't personally. I think it's got a lot of moving parts, and because you're going to have to try to explain sort of engine building, you know, area control and your worker placement. I think for somebody new, it would have a lot of AP, especially when you're landing a guy and you're trying to figure out which sort of option you're going to take. Or there's quite a few worker placement spots, and in each spot there's up to four choices. So it can be a really tough decision. I would worry that this would sort of be very prone to AP with a new player.
Right.
And it's so many other like concepts to understand as well, like the missions, or do I use this card for this? Or do I use a card for that? And why can't I afford anything? And trying to think of their strategies that I don't think would be very natural for a new player. And look, I'd love to hear how it went for a new player. I'd love to introduce this to somebody, but I thought of busting it out for my friends the other day who've played a few board games with me, but I felt it was a bit above their level. I tried to teach Architects to some new people a little while ago based on a few recommendations, and that didn't go over well. Right. But the theme didn't appeal to them either.
Right.
The sort of ye olden theme was a bit boring, whereas Cryo probably would gain people's attention a lot more because it looks so beautiful. The colors capture your eye. There's so many moving bits. It would capture someone's interest a lot more. Like somebody, even that's not a gamer, would walk past this game and go, wow, what's that? I want to know more about it. But personally, me, I wouldn't feel comfortable teaching it to a newbie myself. I'd want to ease them into it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
That's me. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's funny you mention that, because the person who did mention it is a bit of a thinker when it comes to games. So maybe they like that long and difficult decision-making process. So, well, that was Cryo from Z-Man Games. So
that's right.
Really, really keen to play this, as previously mentioned. I will get there, I promise. I'm going to talk about an expansion to a game, and I believe Connor spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, so apologies for doubling up so close, but I've been playing this a lot over the last few days or weeks, and that is the Paladins of the West Kingdom City of Crowns expansion. Mm. And yes, I'm going to cop more heat because I sizzled Wayfarers last episode, and now I'm sizzling another
fanboy.
Another Garfield Games product.
Fanboy.
But you know what? They just make good stuff. They make really good stuff. And this expansion is no exception. This is probably this is an expansion where the first question that people ask about a good expansion is, oh, would you ever play without it? This is an expansion that I would never want to play without, but I will never play with the expansion if the person is somewhat new to the game. This is definitely an advanced expansion. It adds a lot, and it adds more decisions to a game that already had a lot of decisions. So I do really feel like that this is a more experienced player's expansion of the game for this game, not just a throw it in the box and use it for everybody. So that definitely, I mean, and Paladins is kind of noted in the West Kingdom series as being the heaviest of the three. It and Viscounts are pretty close, but definitely heavier than Architects, right? Whereas Architects expansion, I would add in from the start, new players. But this one, first of all, it increases the length of the main board, which is already quite long.
Well, it's not long enough already, is it?
Yeah, that's right. Now, you literally need a table that's more than 4 feet long to play this game, I think. So what it does is it adds a section at the start and a section at the end. This section at the end is not really that amazing. It's just an extra spot to discard cards and give you a few extra benefits. But the one at the start is where it's at. So it brings diplomacy into Paladins. And you can get diplomacy by a couple of different things, by using the muster ability or using the negotiation ability. So the muster ability, what you do is you've got these four cards and they've got a left and a right side and they've got a benefit at the bottom. So as an action, you can just put your worker on there like you do for the King's Favor spots. So I apologize if you haven't played Paladins. There's a lot of things going on in Paladins. So I'm just going to address the expansion for this one. I have sizzled Paladins in the past, and I know that Connor has too. So, and I think Def might have as well. So probably best to go back and listen if this is your first introduction to Paladins, because a lot of the stuff I'm saying probably won't make a lot of sense. And I apologize in advance for that. In the normal game of Paladins, you've got a King's Favor spot that comes out from round three onwards, and it's just an extra worker placement spot that one person can take each round. Well, these four muster cards, it's basically the same thing. On the left side, you can just place a worker, potentially pay a resource to get the benefit below. The benefits below are things like the prey action. They're things like getting recruiting a townsfolk for free, these sort of things that are kind of common throughout the game and very advantageous. The difference is those workers don't leave those cards. So if you put them out there, it blocks it this round, but it also blocks it for every round, unless someone takes the muster action and moves the diplomat onto the right side of those cards and purchases it by paying the workers on the diplomat space and paying the required amount of provisions to take that particular card. When you take it, you gain the worker that's on it, if there is a worker. It doesn't have to be. Someone may not have gone there, but if there is, you gain the worker to your supply to use this round, which is pretty powerful in itself. Mm-hmm. But then you also gain the benefit that was on the card as well, and you gain diplomacy on the track. So it's kind of like a three-pronged benefit for using the muster ability. So that is one of the main new additions to the game, and it's just a really nice addition, just that alone, because it gives, what it does is it opens up the game in a sense where you can go and find another place to do some of these actions that usually cost money. So getting a townsfolk costs money. You can potentially go here and avoid that. Praying costs 2 coins. You can potentially go here and avoid that. Or the other side of it is you can, if you're short of money, sometimes you can go there and get 2 coins, and it's only takes one worker, whereas the usual action to trade, or I think it's trade, you've got to use 2 workers to get 3 coins. So it's a better exchange rate. So it gives you a better chance to get a few extra things. And then that idea that someone can come over and move the card open later, all that does is reveal another card. So now there's another spot out there that you can go to. So I really like that. That's one side of this expansion. Underneath that board is the negotiate cards, and they've got a top and a bottom, and this has become a bit synonymous with Garfield Games lately, is that there's a lot of their cards have a top benefit and a bottom row benefit. So in this one, the bottom benefit is a set collection game that is not dissimilar to what you find in Viscounts with with the menu scripts.
Because Wayfarers has a
and Wayfarers set collection has an element as well,
doesn't it? Yeah.
That's right, yeah. So
the old listing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gary.
So how it works is you get this extra little starting board and it has a symbol on it. And then whenever you purchase a negotiate card, which essentially same as any other action, you've got to put the workers in the negotiate space and you've got to have a certain level of whatever attribute is required on the attribute track. You claim a card and it's got another symbol on it. If it is different to the symbol that you already have, great. If you get the full set of 4, it's victory points. So you get for every set, you get X amount of victory points. But if it's the same, if you can get 3 of the same, you claim what's called an ally card. And the ally card will give you an additional worker of a particular color each round, as well as an immediate benefit, whether that might be coins, provisions, getting rid of a suspicion card, those sort of things, right? And you claim that sits on your in your collection for the rest of the game. So if you can hit this pretty hard and get a load of symbols out, and some of the cards have double symbols on them and all that sort of stuff, you could potentially get a couple of extra workers every single round of the game, which is pretty helpful.
Very powerful.
Where you really only start with 6 workers each round, right? So having a 7th or an 8th worker is pretty awesome. But the top part of that card, I really like the top card. And Mike, you've talked about Paladins before. You like it, so you'll appreciate this, right? In Paladins, the main actions like fortify, commission, garrison, absolve, what's the other ones? Attack or convert. They require a certain level of resources, whether that be provisions or money. And also they require a particular level of attribute to be able to get them. The top part of these cards has one of those 6 main base actions, but it has an additional plus number on the attribute that applies to it. So if you could go to the fort card, it's like +2 blue, which I think is I can't remember what the blue is. I've chosen a bad one. Let's just go black because that's faith. Mm-hmm. I remember that, right? So if you wanted to commission, it might say a commission action plus two. So if you could then add that to whatever attribute you have to potentially get a higher up benefit, which is cool. That's not the coolest part. The coolest part is you don't have to pay any of the provision or the coin cost to do this action because you're paying for this action by placing your workers on the spot. And depending on which card you take, the first one costs nothing, second one costs one coin, third one costs two coins, and the fourth one costs either a debt or three coins. So you could potentially, if you want that first one, you can place three workers, take one of the main actions without having to pay the resources and potentially getting a better benefit out of it. So it's super powerful. If it works for your strategy at the time, it's excellent. So that's they're the two main things, the muster ability with the left and the right side, getting those benefits, and the negotiate cards with the top and the bottom, getting those benefits. If you do the bottom row action, you get diplomacy. If you do the top row action, you need diplomacy. Yeah. So unlike the other ones where you get, it might require blue and you get red, this is you require white or you get white. So which is white is diplomacy. Oh, it's not really white. It's some other color, but it looks white to me because I'm colorblind. but aside of that, it adds a lot of other things in the game that go in with the rest of the game. Like it adds more paladins, it adds more townsfolk, more outsiders, what you would expect, more king's favors, more king's orders that match with what the expansion brings into it. So when you explain all that, I guess it doesn't sound too technical, but adding this into a game that already has six base action spaces, as well as like your standard actions, like your developing and recruiting and et cetera, it's a lot to play all in one sitting. So that's why I suggest that maybe if you played a Paladins a few times, add this in. I wouldn't recommend jumping straight into this. I think it'd be a massive overload. I've played it a lot solo. They've updated the solo version to suit this game, and it works seamlessly, and it's really hard. It was standard. I played it at standard difficulty, and after a few plays, I was winning by a point or two, and after a few plays, I managed to start winning by 15, 20. So then I decided to change to hard and also change up my strategy, try and press a few more buttons and see what other combos I could get to work. And I got slaughtered. I lost by about 50 points in that game. And I've set it up again, and I'm going again with hard mode. I'm into round two or three. It's kind of hard to tell how that one's going, but I feel like it's going better than what it was before. that's the City of Crowns expansion. The simple thing to say here is if you really enjoy Paladins, you're going to love this expansion. It adds so much for the seasoned player, but I think it adds a little bit too much for the newer player.
Yeah. I've only played it the once, and I really enjoyed it. So I'd probably want to get a couple more plays under my belt before I give it a crack. But, man, yeah, it was such a great game. And I was trying to convince Renata to play it, like, the next day because I wanted to play it again so I can teach it and remember what was happening. Mm. Now it's been a few weeks. I've played 10 games in between, and I can't remember anything now. So I need a full refresher, but it's all right. We'll get around to it. I'll get the expansion eventually, I'm sure.
The one thing that's cool about this, right, and this is a hot tip. We'll call it a hot tip for pretty much any of these West Kingdom games. Don't sleep on the townsfolk. Get townsfolk are underrated and super powerful. You look at a townsfolk card and on its own, and you go, "Oh, that's not that great. I get an extra coin if I do this thing. Whatever." I had 12 townsfolk's cards at once in one of these games, and it was like, the game took half an hour longer because every time I did an action, I'm like, right, I get this from this card, then I get this from this card, then I get. There was one round six of the game I played. At the end of the round, you can only keep three workers maximum to go through to the next round. I had to throw back six workers because I had nowhere to place them on my board.
That's crazy.
Every action I did, I kept getting workers. And at the time, I played the paladin that makes all laborers wild. And every action was giving me another laborer. So I just kept getting these actions continually refreshed back through my game. Wow. I'm like, this is insane. So there's some really cool combos you can make. So that expansion or not, if you're playing any of these West Kingdom games, go and invest early in Townsfolk and just watch the end game come together. It's fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah, so there you have it. That's City of the Crowns, Paladin's West Kingdom expansion. Definitely worth a look. But from there, I'm going to move over to Dan, and I'm going to stop talking about Garfield Games for a while.
Look, I want a sizzler game tonight that's been fulfilling or across Australia from its Kickstarter. Would have been very early this year, I think. And I know Mike's got his as well, so I'll throw to Mike for a little bit of this. But this is Project L. Project L, or specifically I think it was redone. It's got the finesse, and there's an ambassador, and there's a whole bunch of add-ons. I was going to say plugins. There's a whole bunch of add-ons that came with it as well. But essentially, it's a polyomino engine builder, and this is fun. This is really, really good. The first thing you notice when, and it was kind of evident from the campaign as well, but certainly when you get your hands on it, the quality of this game is amazing. It's such high quality. So we're talking about the pieces themselves, the polyomino sort of Tetris style pieces. But funnily enough, polyomino, that's a word I learned this year from this podcast. Yes. I would have always just said Tetris pieces until that. So there you go, chalk one up to the board game barbecue. The boards themselves, they're the double layer recessed boards. So the part that you're trying to fill in with the polyomino pieces, that's recessed, and it's really, really high quality. It comes with game trays. Everyone loves game trays. I don't know any Kickstarter that isn't using game trays at the moment. They really should. The rule book, it's like a velvety, I don't know, it's got a really like a linen finish on the rule book as well, the box. And then one of the expansions that comes with these, what they're called credits, but they're just basically metal coins, and they are wicked as well. So anyway, I'm going to stop gushing about the components and actually tell you what the game's about. It's essentially, there are a series of boards. There's the white boards, which are your basic, more basic boards that you're trying to fulfill, and then the black boards, which are of higher value. And the black boards, depending on how many people are playing in the game, you put a limited number of them on the table, and you'll put four of each across the table in the middle, and each of the boards has a polyomino shape, which you have to fill with the pieces. It'll have a reward. Once you complete that board, it'll have another piece which you can obtain and add to your collection, which you can then use, obviously, like an engine builder, to fulfill more, to fill out more boards. And some of them, well, in fact, most of them will have a point value as well. And the white cards have lower values, and the black cards, which are the ones with the higher points, that's why there's less of them. And the game continues until there's no black cards left in the deck, and then there's a final round, and that's game over. So what you're doing is you're starting, and everyone gets three actions, and everyone also starts with a single piece, so just a 1x1 square and a 1x2 square. And they're the only pieces you actually have to start with, and the only way you can get more pieces is by fulfilling a board. So the actions that you can do is you can take a puzzle from the middle, and you can take a black one right off the bat if you want to, but they're much harder to fill because the area, the real estate that you're trying to fill with the polyomino spaces is much, much larger. So you tend to start with the smaller ones, which are the white ones. You can upgrade a piece if you want, so you can take your 1x1 and upgrade it to 1x2. You can take your 1x2 and upgrade it to one of the pieces that have three, which is your three across, 1x3, or it's your L shape. And then there are five of your fours, which is the T, the 1x4, there's a square, and the L, all the Tetris shapes that we're familiar with. You can place a piece on one of your puzzles. You can, what they call a master, it's like a master play, where you can put a piece in every puzzle that you have, one in every puzzle. So if you have three puzzles and you have three pieces, you can go doot, doot, doot in one action. And the last one you can do is just recycle. So if there's nothing out there that you like, you can basically just remove all the white tiles, chuck them at the bottom of the white pile, and then refresh with four new ones. What we learned very early on is you need to take this game slowly, because Jen and I sat down and played, and I basically explained the rules as I've explained it to you guys, and she goes, okay, so it's all about once the black pile's finished, whoever's got the most points, cool. First one I'll take is a black one.
Yeah, yeah.
You've only got two to start with. You can't fulfill that requirement with just your two. So you need to actually start small. But just like every engine builder, the game picks up that what you can do, that where you can put your puzzles and fulfill the puzzles and get more pieces, it picks up speed really quickly. The great one, as you heard Mike mention, is the master play. If you've got four puzzles, you've got four pieces, you just go, but you only have to do that once per turn. So it does restrict you from just going and smashing out these puzzles. But the way this game is designed, the balance is really, really sweet. So the higher value puzzles actually don't give you great pieces. The lower value puzzles are the ones that might give you a square or a long one. So you really got to pick your movements where, okay, I need to go for the higher value black tiles to get more points because the game might be ending soon. But that the reward for filling that is not actually that sweet. So you sort of got to look at what's available and go and planning ahead. I've only played it with two players. I played it solo. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I think with maybe three or four players, it would be harder to play ahead because by the time it comes around to your turn, you don't necessarily know what tiles are going to be available to you. But you do need to look at what tiles you have available and go, well, if I put this here and then I put that there, I'm going to fulfill that and then I'm going to get a square, which I can then use on this one. I can fulfill that tile, which that gives me an L shape, which I can then use for that one. And you start comboing and chaining these puzzles together and it's just so satisfying. It reminds me of, and one of our favorite engine builders is Splendor, which again starts off kind of slow, and then towards when it gets nearer to the end game, it's just like bang, fulfill that, bang, fulfill that card, bang, fulfill that, and then I'm at 15 points and I win. This is very, very similar. You start starting off slow and then gaining speed, and away you go. I'll talk about the solo mode in a moment, but. The pieces, as I said, there's your 1 point pieces, your 2 point, your 3 point, your 4 point, and then it comes with an expansion, which I'm going to get Mike to talk about, which is the Ghost expansion, and they're black pieces, and they're the five.
They're level five pieces, but you can't upgrade to them normally, which is the fun part.
Yeah. So how do you obtain the black pieces?
So when you add in the Ghost expansion, and the Ghost pieces are some of my favorite ones, I think. There's two ways of getting it. So some of your white cards, some of your white gold cards have a ghost piece on them and you can just take a ghost piece straight away. Happy days.
Mm-hmm.
The other way is some of your other cards have a red arrow on them. So the red arrow allows you to upgrade a level four to a level five piece. Nice. So you can't take a normal action to do it, but you can, fulfill a card and the reward is to upgrade a level four to a level five. There are actually some of them that also have double upgrade action. So you can take a level three to a level five.
I was going
to
ask that. So I'm assuming if you take one of those, because we haven't broken that one out. We've played the standard game a couple of times. It's one of the few games in recent times where we've played it and Jen's gone, okay, let's play again. I get it now.
Yeah.
Norma's like, okay, that was good. Let's go to bed. She's like, no, we're not going anywhere. Let's play this one again. So I'm assuming if the black one is out, one of the ghost tiles is out there and it's an upgrade. The reward for fulfilling the puzzle is an upgrade, but you don't have a level four. There's no point taking it.
You
still just do a
level upgrade. No, you probably no point in taking it.
Yeah.
You probably want to use it to get a ghost piece.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are they like, they take up sort of five squares length, or they're really interesting shapes that take up a lot more room.
They are obscure. And they're not the normal polyomino shapes that we're used to seeing in Tetris.
They're a bit different. One's like a little curved piece. The one's like a square with a little nub at the end. They're really good pieces. But the beauty of them is the ghost action. So the ghost action is really, really awesome because, like you said, the master action, you can only take once per turn, but a ghost action doesn't have a limit on it. What you do with a ghost action is you grab your ghost piece and you break it up into whatever combination you want. So I have this ghost piece. I'm going to break it up into a little L piece and two level one yellow pieces, and that becomes a master action in itself. You get to divide that up against all the puzzles out and put any leftovers in your bank.
Right.
So that becomes really amazing at the end of the game. I'll let you talk about finishing touches.
Yeah.
But when finishing touches comes around, when you can do a mass action and two ghost actions at the end, bang, 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 you just fill up a whole bunch of stuff and it's amazing. Mm. So the ghost expansion, I taught it to somebody who's never played a board game before the other day with the ghost expansion.
Cool.
And they took it fine and they absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
So chuck it in there, man, because you'll have a great time.
Oh, we're definitely doing it next.
It adds that perfect next level to the game, and being able to break that piece apart into however you like is really cool.
Yeah. So I've got the Ghost expansion. I've also got the Finesse expansion as well, which are a series of objectives that are on the table. And the objectives are in the middle of the table for everyone to actually achieve. And the objective might be to, at the end of your turn, to have only one of each shape. on your playmat or in your reserve, or it might be to finish two puzzles in one master action. So it makes you think about how you want to it changes the way you play in order to obtain these objectives, and then you get the credits. These are the coins, and the coins give you additional actions later on as well. So that's a really sweet one. And the thing that Mike mentioned as well was the finishing touches. So once the black deck runs out, there'll still be four out there, and everyone has one more turn. And then after that, you're allowed to apply what they call finishing touches. And what finishing touches basically means is if you have any other pieces on your tableau, on your board, you can add them to any of your puzzles to complete them and get the points. But for every piece you add, you actually lose a point. So if you've got a 5-point puzzle here that only takes two more pieces, you put two more pieces down, it's worth 3 points. But that's brilliant because you can actually rock it. If you've got a 4-point puzzle here, but it hasn't been touched and it takes 4 points to do it, you're not going to bother. So you can, in that respect, towards the end of the game, start loading up on those bigger puzzles. But if you can apply finishing touches at the end and actually get a couple extra points, then it's definitely worth it. It's such a magnificent game. Now the solo mode is its own unique sort of beast. It's a really interesting puzzle. You're kind of playing against a bot. It says like it's another player, and what you're doing is you're taking 15 of the white tiles and then 10 of the black at random. So you're only playing with 25 tiles, and the white ones are on top, and you take them and you put them out in a 3x3 grid, and you're using the 1x1 blocks, kind of they're like markers. So that you could use really anything, but it just uses the blocks because that's what's in the game tray. And the two outside columns, the first column and the third column, you put one piece on top, and the middle one you put two pieces, and then you assign I was doing three pieces, which is kind of like normal mode, to the bot. You can give the bot 6 pieces, or you can give it 0 pieces, which is like super difficult. And you play the game as per normal, so you've still got your standard actions, only three, but you've got 5 to choose from. And you take a piece, and then wherever you take that piece from, whichever column you take a tile from, if there's a marker at the top of it, you move that to the bot, and the bot takes that marker. And when it's the bot's turn, if there's any column that has no markers available, they're kind of like considered unlocked, and it will take one of those, and it will take the highest value tile from that column. If there isn't one that's unlocked, then what it does is it takes one marker from every column. So now suddenly you might have all of them unlocked. So, and then it'll be your turn again. And again, you can do your actions. You can take a puzzle. You can start filling them. You can do masters and get points and stuff. But it's kind of a race to fulfill as many puzzles as you can and take the higher value puzzles before they all basically just get absorbed by the bot. But you can also juggle it and take something. Okay, I'm going to take one from this column so and then I have to move the marker at the top, which might unlock that column. But now there's no tiles in there that have any value. So the bot will take one of those and then lock it back up again with its markers. So you can kind of manage the puzzles, but by doing that, you're not gunning for the end. So it's kind of a bit of a juggle. The first time I played it, I just played normal. I think I scored like 16 points, but the bot had like 20 something. Because every time I'd unlock it, I'd like a column, there might be, and of course, once you get to the black tiles, which are at the bottom of the deck, now suddenly there's 4-point and 5-point tiles out there. So the bot on its turn is taking 4 points, 5 points at a time. So you kind of want to manage. You don't want to just go for glory. You want to kind of manage what the bot is going to get on its turn to try and minimize the points that it goes while you're still trying to maximize your play. So it completely shifts the way you have to think about the game. But it's a really unique puzzle and a unique way of playing this kind of engine builder. It would have been very easy to do a different style game, I think, but they've turned this into a real interesting puzzle as opposed to just simply fulfilling it and trying to get as many points as you can in X amount of moves or something like that. You know, it's really, really unique. So we're wrapped with it. I mean, the quality aside, it's such a fun game, as you mentioned, Steve. Mike, it'd be very easy to start teaching people as well. So
I feel it's a great gateway game. Like this will race up my top 100. Absolutely. Yeah. My only regret, you told me about this game one late one night. I actually nearly bought it a second time because I forgot I backed it. But because I was arming and ahhing so much, I didn't back everything. So I've only got the main box for NES expansion and the Ghost expansion. I don't have the Ambassador. I don't have the big box of the game trays. Okay. I am spewing now. I am so upset. So
the game trays are lovely. Yeah.
I've got my 3D printer working at the moment. So we'll see if I can come up with something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an amazing game.
So hopefully it'll start coming to retail soon because I'm pretty sure their fulfillment is nearing its completion. It's from Board Cubator. And I was having a look online today, and they've got another game coming out, a completely different game, called Kingdom Come Deliverance. That's coming out next year. I think it's going to be coming to GameFound. But
I can't believe I've missed this.
Yeah.
As you guys were talking, I just jumped on the BGG page. I'm looking at the pictures, and I'm like, this is not what I thought this game was, and this looks awesome. This looks like a game that you could play with anybody.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
They'd all have a good time.
Yeah, but there are expansions to play with 5 and 6 players as well. I think you need to bust out
it changes the game mode a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like it says it's called Line Clear, which is like when you play Tetris and you clear a line.
Okay. But yeah, it looks. I absolutely love this game. It's really, really good game, and I'll teach it to anyone. It plays in like what, half an hour, 45 minutes,
yeah, if that. Yeah. Once you get your groove on, I think the games get a bit quicker. I know.
Yeah.
Probably took about half an hour our first game, and our next one was probably over in maybe 20, 25.
And it's so satisfying. Like, how good do you feel if you do a master action and you finish 3 puzzles in one go? You're like, yeah, look at me go. How good is this? Like, you really get that really satisfactory, just, amazing feeling. Yeah. It's so good.
Or you do a master move. You've got 3 puzzles. You do a master move, which completes one of them, which grants you a piece, which you can now use for the next one, which then grants you a piece, which then you can use for the third one. It's like, mwah, chef's kiss.
Yeah. Like, everyone, are you watching me? Watch what I do right now.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So good.
Very cool. Well, that's got the purchase pen out for sure, that one, Project L. Awesome. That'll do us for our sizzles for tonight, though. We'll move straight on into the topic of the pod. But before we do that, actually, need to do a big shout-out to Dean from Advent Games, or just Advent Games in general, who will be at our Sydney Game Day in a few days, only like literally one day away from when this gets released, which is insane. So very disappointed I can't make it down for the Sydney event. But for those who are going, I'm sure you're going to have an absolute blast. And Dean is bringing some library games as well as having his pop-up store there, so make sure you pop in and say g'day. And if just a little tidbit of information you may not have known, if you listen to our top 10s of all time, the voiceover doing the countdown was actually Dean from Event Games.
So, legend.
Thanks for that. But, check out his store and jump onto our Facebook page to enter into the giveaway competition. And all you got to do there is check out his Christmas specials page and come back and comment on something that you found there that you really like. So go forth and do that, and we'll move straight on to the topic of the pod. So this time of year, a lot of people are on holidays. So when we're talking about what we could talk about on the episode, I suggested traveling with games or packing games to go on holidays, and there's somewhat of an art form to this, I think. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind not having all the boxes with you, you can certainly pack a lot more stuff. But there's definitely different ways of doing that, but not necessarily talking about just the mechanics of how to take games away and how to maximize space, but also what types of games you want to take away on holidays. Do you want to take a whole bunch of heavy Euros because you've got plenty of time and you're just going to sit there and learn 10 new games in the course of a week? Or do you want to, because you're on holidays, you just want to chill out and play games like that just sort of take your mind off things and you don't have to think and just have a good time? So I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this one. And when we spoke about this, Mike was a little bit unsure, but I'm going to hit up Mike first because Mike is the king of the small games. When we go to game days, Mike's always got like, he pulls out his bag and it just seems like it's Mary Poppins. There's just more stuff coming out of there all the time. And he suggested that he might not be very good at this segment, and I tend to disagree. So can you just tell us, because you've also got a quiver, right?
No, I don't. That was Draven had one.
Right.
No, well, what I've got, I've actually bought 2 of them. I bought these little camera bags off eBay for like $25. One's really bright orange, one's black, but they're squared off. Because the problem was, I've got this big game bag I take whenever I go to a game day. And every time I put all my little, I love having my little collection of small games. Like I've got like, I don't know, 10 little games that I think are a staple for every game day, for in between or getting everyone warmed up. But when I put my games in there, they'd all start falling apart in my actual game bag. So I've got this little bag to put in my bag that holds all my small games in it. It's an amazing little bag. But yeah, I do have a little collection. I've got a bit of it. Well, I got it right now. I got it right here. Let me dip into the bag right now.
Oh, hello. Which is bag of tricks.
So currently in the bag of tricks, which Renata took some to her work today, so there's a few missing. But right now I've got Bonanza, Saboteur, Hanabi, One-Eyed Ultimate Werewolf, Red 7, Silver and Gold, Fantastic Realms, Fantasy Realms, High Society, Oriflamme, Six Nymphs. I usually have Illusion in there as well. What else should I take out of there? I sometimes fit Fleet the Dice Game in there too. And a couple other small games I can't think of off the top of my head. But it fits in this little tiny bag and they're quite handy. So when I do go on holiday, that might be an option to take with me. The reason I was a bit unsure about this segment for myself is because I haven't been on many holidays since getting into the hobby. Renata did remind me we went glamping for a weekend and had a little round table at the front. And we did play things like Cat Lady, J-Paw, and Tiny Epic Galaxies, which did remind me that's why I have this whole collection of Tiny Epic games next to me. Because the thought was, if I ever do go on a holiday and I want a little bit of a bitier game, but obviously I can't go taking all my games with me. I haven't really played many of them, but the hope is I can chuck a few of them in my bag and explore, because those games pack a bit of a punch. Yeah. They can be pretty good games. So I had them in anticipation that if I do go on a holiday or go on a trip away and want to take a few games with me, they might be a good option to take for something a bit meatier instead of a small party game. I'm interested to know, like, what you guys have done, because I know that you guys have traveled with board games before, and I want to know, like, when on your holidays you play board games. Because for me, like, if I'm especially in another country, I'm so go. I can't really see myself stopping for a board game.
Yeah.
Except when I go to America next year, which I should be, I'm hopefully going to be near some of our other members of the community. Or near, like, maybe like Jesse from Quackalope or Lincoln and Nikki from Game Night. And if I can try to get a game in with them, that would be amazing to catch up with them, you know, IRL. So that for me is a time when I'm traveling. I think I'd really love to play a board game. But when do you guys sort of play board games on your holidays?
Well, for us, it was, well, our last family holiday, it was really before bedtime. So we would have dinner and then we'd play some board games, just help the boys. Ollie was still a baby, so it was Jack. We just help wind down. It's not like, okay, not like at home where we'll watch television or whatever. It was like, no, let's just, we were in Queensland, so we were playing board games. And I have made the mistake before of packing boxes.
Yeah.
And they just, regardless of how strong the suitcase is, they just get a little bit too damaged for my liking. So if it's got boards, we'll just take the boards out and sort of flat pack them against each other and put them in between clothes and then just Ziploc bag, dice and cards and whatnot. I mean, thinking of storage, a really great tip is if you Google photo storage, I know Kmart have them here in Australia, but also Spotlight, all of the craft stores, they'll have these tiny little, they'll have these sort of bigger, almost like a tackle box. In fact, you could probably use a tackle box as well. These larger clear boxes that store smaller ones. And I know that the whole print and play community use these a lot as well for get cards that you print off. But similarly, you can usually, some of the larger ones, you can fit two decks side by side. You could put all of those games that you have in there as well. And in terms of what kind of games we play, it would generally be the lighter games, because we just like to, as you say, when we go on holidays, we go. We go on to see amusement parks or zoos or whatever the boys want to do, go for a swim. But Jen and I will actually play a game at the end of the night to wind down. I got fond memories of, it was before we joined the podcast, but we had a trip to the Queensland where we would play a game after dinner with Jack, put him to bed. Then we go out in the balcony as the sun was setting, have a bottle of wine, and we were playing King Domino and Azul and just some just really nice sort of just chill out games, because you're on holiday. So we weren't really in the mood to sort of burn our brains a little bit. Mm. Plus it's usually been a busy day anyway. Even just when you're just lazing about by the pool, you're still knackered by the end of the day. So just to, you know, have a bottle of wine, just play some of these really cruisy games. And yeah, we King Domino, I didn't take the box. I think I just packed the boards between some some shirts and just had everything else, just the tiles in Ziploc bags, and they travel really, really well. Mm. My first time I actually did, I went on a work trip, and I was staying in Perth for a couple nights because I had clients over there. So I packed Arkham Horror, and it just got beat up, that box, and I was spewing. So, but luckily I bought the Return to long box, and so I ended up throwing that box away. But I'll never pack board game boxes again.
Hmm. Mike, I think the real answer to this question is that both Dan and I have kids, so I can understand. If I'm Helen and I on a holiday pre children, then we're probably not getting home until the late hours of the night or the early hours of the morning. But kids have bedtimes, and as soon as you have one night where they don't, they end up ruining the next day. You got to make sure you stick to it. Similar to Dan, we play games mostly as a family after dinner, and then Helen and I would play other games after the kids go to bed. And then Helen would go to bed, and then that's when I'd play something that I really want to play. Board games travel with us wherever we go now. And I've got one of those board game bags that everyone has these days, but similar to Dan, it's just full of ziplocked everything. And the common one that I've talked about on the pod before is when we went to Bali, and I put so many games in that bag that when I came back through customs, they thought that the cubes might have been drugs, or the little eggs from Wingspan might have been some sort of eckies or something. I don't know. So I took a lot of explaining to the people that it's all for board games inside that bag. But there's two sides to it for us. There's I've talked about before as well, the airport games.
I was going to raise that because you've spoken about that before, haven't you?
Yeah. And that's just because I am paranoid about being late for flights. I always have been, and I always will be. And I used to be a travel agent. So you hear all these horror stories of people have flat tires on the way to the airport and all this sort of stuff. So I am 3 hours before an international flight. I'm at the airport every single time. And 9 times out of 10, you're through customs, you're through everything, and you've got like 2 hours and 45 minutes to spare.
Yeah.
So pulling out a bunch of airport games, and I'm talking about all those small games similar to what you just mentioned, Mike, your six nymphs, the mind, the kids love exploding kittens. So, well, that's pretty much the only time I'll play that game.
Love letter.
like those sort of games. That's one side of my travel gaming. But then when we get to the place, I do like to have some more media games, and the ones that always get taken are the ones that I know that Helen will play and I know the kids will play. So Ticket to Ride always comes along. Sentry, Golem Edition, Azul, Rez Arcana. We took Wingspan away a couple of times, King of Tokyo. These sort of games that you can just throw on the table and everyone knows how to play them because they've been around for a while and we played them at home. But then once the kids are finished playing, or they might not want to play tonight or whatever else, then Helen and I can sit down and have a game of Rez. Last time we took Champions of Midgard away, which I hadn't played in a long time, and it was really cool. And that's something that is worth mentioning too. You mentioned about the boards, Dan. There's another way to do it, which is an extra benefit that I never thought of in the process of buying these. But if you've got a neoprene playmat of a game, they are way easier to pack to take on a holiday than a board. It didn't occur to me. I never bought a neoprene playmat going, this will be great for when we go away. But Champions of Midgard is the perfect example because we just put the playmat in and it just went in the bottom of our bag and happy days. So, that's another benefit of neoprene, I guess.
So, interesting. Yeah.
Hmm. What you mentioned some of the like some more meatier games. What are some examples of some media games that are easy to travel? I suppose we're talking about like more portable games that give you more bang for your buck.
I think of a game like The Red Cathedral, which is fairly new because it's a small box game that packs a huge punch. Even some games like Empires of the North, because it's just card play. Yeah, Marvel Champions. You could easily take Marvel Champions away.
Yep.
Yeah, these sort of games that just are heavily reliant on a card-based system, yeah, easy as. You can definitely do that. I'm just trying to think of other unmatched, yeah. Although you've got to take at least one board, but essentially everything else is pretty basic. And although some of these games come in big, nice, lavish boxes with lots of plastic, once you take all that out and put them in a Ziploc bag, they're not very big.
Another good, we're talking about going on holidays, but what about while you're actually traveling? I mean, all the button shy games, they're perfect to play on a plane, on a train. Even the very early on, Mitch Sizzled Palm Island, which is a solo game that you literally play in your hand. You can play that while you're on a plane or on the airport shuttle that takes forever to get there. You can always bust out a move on that. And the other thing is, I have been known to in the past when I go traveling interstate for work, even just take some rule books of games that I've just purchased and bone up on the rules, or so that when I come home, I'm good to go. I'm not going to take the game with me, but I'll take the rule book and read about it. Maybe watch some playthroughs while I'm away, and then when I get home, fire up.
That's pretty clever. I like that.
That's another good game. That's pretty clever.
One thing that I regret. So when Renata hears me talk about Kickstarter, she shudders, and when she starts hearing me talk about add-ons and expansions, she just shudders even more. But the one thing she gives me flack about for not buying that surprises me is when the last Kickstarter for Zombicide Second Edition came out, they had a travel Zombicide that you could get. A little fold-up magnetic Zombicide with little tiny cards, a little magnetized zombies. And when I told her about it, she goes, "Wait, you didn't get that? What if we go on holidays? We can play Zombicide." I'm like, "You want me to buy that? Like, really?" And she's always like, "I can't believe out of everything you've bought, that's the one thing you didn't buy and that we could really use when we go traveling." She loves Zombicide like I do. And so, like, I want to put out a word to say, "Hey, did anyone buy that I can buy it off you?" Because she'd be wrapped if I found that. And so would I, really. If I could play Zombicide anytime, that'd be awesome. Being stuck on a few-hour flight playing Zombicide with the next to me, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. We tried a few games on the planes, and we've had some good success. The Mind works really well, especially if you've got a few people sitting together, because it does get a bit chaotic because you get bigger hands, but overall you really just need a discard pile and a pile for your lives and a pile for your what do we call those little wrench things are. But we also played It's a Wonderful World, which got a bit tricky towards the end. So we didn't take the board, we just had the five stacks of things, and as a general rule that's not a good idea, but we just left them in the baggies so they didn't fly all over the plane if we got turbulence or whatever. But as you start building out your kingdom, you're like, I'll just turn right. Just sort of work around in a circle. But we got it. We played it, and we had a good time with that. And, again, it's another card-based game that really doesn't take up much space.
I suppose you do have a lot more room at the pointy end. There's not much room back in cattle class where Mike and I sit. But
yeah. I've got three kids. You know that I'm not traveling up the pointy end. Far out.
One thing I'll touch on that I have done a bit of that Mitch sort of pointed out to me is that I have done a bit of outdoor gaming. So if you're camping or thinking to be traveling outdoors, one thing that you wouldn't normally think to bring that I ended up making essential was my playmat. During lockdowns, I was doing a bit of gaming in parks. And one thing I realized is that a lot of the parks in the area have gaps under the table. So even if you're playing something with tiles, the wind would come under and push all the tiles up, or the table would be a bit dirty or not very even. So a playmat over the table was a really good resource. And another thing I started bringing along to all my games I played outside was a bag of old coins. So I've got like coins from America that I still haven't lying around. Mm-hmm. And whenever we play a card game, I just put a coin on top of every card that we were playing in case a gust of wind came. Yep. Sort of kept everything flat and weighted down. Just little things like that, really good touches. Because
there's nothing worse than losing a card down the decking.
No.
It's happened to us once, and it was we all just watched it float off the table in slow motion and just go straight through the gap in the decking. It was like just a moment's silence between everyone, and then we all just wet ourselves laughing.
Oh goodness. I couldn't imagine anything worse. That'd be horrible. And it's just within reach, but not really.
No.
Oh mate. Outdoor gaming, because it's hard trying to find games that don't have too many cards that
are weighty enough that you can play outside in the wind. So having that little bag of coins opened up, you know, which games you could play. So it was really good.
See, camping's a different kettle of fish as well. I think I would take more games camping than I would going overseas or something like that.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the lure of camping for me is that chilling out of an afternoon and doing nothing from like 2 o'clock till dinner time.
Yeah.
And that sounds like perfect time to chill out and play some board games.
For sure. Yeah. I'd bring an extra tent so I can do a fold-out table in there, and that'll be my gaming room tent.
Hell yeah.
Bring a little fold-out Kallax and just, you know, pull it out. That'd be great.
That's awesome.
Check it out.
The camping Kallax. BCF camping need Kallax. To get onto that.
Mate, that's something that should be, that should exist, a camping Kallax for your board games. That's amazing. It flicks out. Imagine just like a really quick flick and it just broom, sets up.
It'd be great.
Yeah, it could be you know, like a sturdy sort of, you know, cardboard or something.
Yeah.
Just put it up and then when you finish, you just burn it. You don't have to take it home. <It's> chuck it on the fire. Hang on, I'm trademarking that. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Hang on.
Camping Kallax fire. Stacked cardboard boxes.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, I don't think we have to really elaborate too much further. I think I've learnt some things just from that. Mike, I got to say, when we went to you first and you talked about all the games you fit in that thing, I'm like, well, that's the segment done. We can't top that. That sounds fantastic. How many games? He just kept on saying game names. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah, so, and you wouldn't probably get through all of them. Yeah, absolutely. That's a night in itself.
Mm.
Well, I wanted to have a mix of everything. If I can have like a roll and write, a push your luck, a set collection, it sort of touches a bunch of different little things. Yeah, so. A
couple
of
party games.
Yeah.
Games that are more serious. Yep.
That's it.
Also worth a shout out too, when Mitch sizzled Bismarck a couple of weeks ago, my head immediately went to travel.
Yeah.
Like if you're on a train or a plane or a bus.
Solitaire game book.
Yeah. And you just need a pen and your dice, but you can use a dice app on your phone and that's all you need. I'm like, you could take that literally anywhere and play that. So I think that was definitely
a cracker.
What triggered in my head when I thought about it.
Very clever.
Well, that'll complete the topic for now. We'll just quickly touch on the board game bracket next. So it was a bit exciting on the last episode to launch round two. And what a classic versus a classic we've got. We've got Brass Birmingham up against Ticket to Ride. So it was so fun because Ticket to Ride got past, I think it was it Vinyas in round one?
Yes.
Yep. Which was, you know, as far as the BGG ratings are concerned, is an upset. But I think it's got that nostalgia around it, which is going to make it challenge Brass Birmingham. I think Brass is definitely going to be the favorite, but I don't know. I really think this one could go each way. We talked about it a bit last episode. What about you, Mike? You haven't played Brass Birmingham?
I've not played Brass. I played Ticket to Ride a couple of times. I'm not very nostalgic to it because I played it after being in the hobby for like a year and a half, 2 years. So it's not a big nostalgia thing for me. I know the love that Brass has, and I'm sure that it'll do very well. But like you said, the nostalgia for a lot of people in being one of the first games that brought them to the hobby and maybe the game they used to bring others into the hobby, I think Ticket to Ride will definitely give it a really good run for its money.
The thing is, I don't know how the rest of the bracket is going to play out, but Brass Birmingham is ranked third in the BGG rankings. If that can't take out Ticket to Ride, what will?
Well, that's the thing, hey. Like, it's you make a really good point. Ticket to Ride's not going to win the whole thing, right?
No.
But Brass, I don't know. I feel like Brass could have made, like, the semis or the final, but this could be the tipping point. Like, if Ticket to Ride could potentially knock it out, and that would be bizarre. I guess maybe something that's a bit newer, maybe like, you know, a Wingspan or Marvel Champions or Too Many Bones or something potentially. But Brass been around for a few years. Obviously it's still very popular. It's number three. I don't know. I still think Brass will take it, but I think it'll be a lot closer than people might initially expect for this one.
I think a lot of our members are going to have a really time making a choice. Sorry, it was a really bad train pun, but I couldn't help myself.
Sorry, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure we have it in writing. I do the dad jokes around here, Mike. I'd appreciate it if you just don't encroach on my territory, mate.
You slept on it, mate. Slept on it. I'll be interested to see which way it goes.
Yeah. Mm. See which ones they choose.
Yeah. Too late, mate. Too late.
Yeah, I know.
All right, we need to get on some tracks and carry ourselves out of here.
Righto.
We will move on to
it's getting derailed.
Yes, I love it. I love it. Give me more dad jokes. All right, we'll move on to the next segment, which is, of course, swearing an oath. All right, so as mentioned at the top of the show, this might be a pretty quick segment of swearing an oath, but we'll firstly, before we start, we'll thank 2D6, obviously, for sponsoring the swear an oath segment this month, and I'll get started myself because 24 hours ago we recorded the last episode. We're recording this one a bit earlier than we normally do because it's becoming a little bit crazy leading in to Christmas trying to get three people together, and that also saying goes for Dan as well, but... I had Cryo, Maglev Metro, and Play Games with Helen as my three oaths. Mm-hmm. And they are still all outstanding because I literally worked today, came home, watched the Formula One from last night, which was fantastic, ate dinner, and did this podcast. So no time for board games except for setting up Paladins and playing the first round or two. So they are all still on there, but I am going to add something else, which isn't necessarily a game, but we're bringing it back. So a while ago, in fact, last Christmas, we instigated Friday Family Fun Night, and it lasted for about 3 or 4 months. So it went beyond the Christmas holidays, but then it kind of died off. But we're bringing it back. So this Friday, which is the day that this episode releases, Friday Family Fun Night will be happening in the Chivers family, and it will be board games. So not only will I play games with Helen over these holidays, I'm also going to make sure that I play games with my kids. Obviously, Raphael loves board games, but Seb and Heidi are a little bit less keen. But I cannot remember a time, and neither can they, where we have said, let's all play a game together as a family. And at the end of that game, they haven't gone away not having a good time. They love it. But if you ask them to do it, they're like, nah. So they don't get a choice. We're doing Friday Family Fun Night, whether they like it or not, because I know at the end of it, they would have had a great time.
Awesome.
So that is my fourth oath that I have running. Let's see how I go before the next episode.
Well, I'm going to pile on top of my pile of disappointment at the moment as well. So as mentioned in the last episode, I've still got Detective Modern Board Game, Lord of the Rings, both of which I'm going to play with Jonathan from our Discord. And then I added Marquee, which was a nice, you know, simple solo game, but then not simple enough for me to play in between episodes. I should have really thought of this while we were recording the last episode, because I had something dropped off on my doorstep from a member of the Melbourne board game community, and funnily enough, a member of our community as well, which I didn't realize. So thanks very much to Paul for doing this, but you might remember earlier in earlier last year I sizzled Loot of Lima, which was the game from boardtables.com, and they've done QE and On Tour and all those ones as well. Great deduction game, trying to find, you're playing pirates and you're trying to find treasures. They brought out a solo, and that was included in there as well. And this, the way the solo mode worked was it was basically like a spreadsheet, and that acts as if you're playing against four other players. And so when you roll the dice and you want to ask a particular player where it is, then you actually just consult this spreadsheet and the table, and it will tell you whether there's a yes or a no. When it was published by Kickstarter, there was many, many errors in it. Oh. And so instead of, like some publishers might do, going, okay, we'll put out a PDF and you can download it from here and da-da-da, they actually went, no, we're going to republish the solo rules and the solo guide that comes with it and give it to everyone, and we will pay for shipping. That's wow. awesome. Which is really, really rare. So the problem was that I actually bought this as part of a group buy in the Melbourne gaming community. And so one person actually contacted them and, I will have 20, please. And so they sent 20 to this one wow. particular person. So thanks. I think it was Andrea. So thanks to Andrea for organizing, A, the group buy, but then also for organizing then the solo manual, the solo rules that came with it. And then various people throughout Melbourne just went, well, I'm going over there, so I'll get four and I'll drop it off at da-da-da-da-da. And what had happened was when the games came out, I actually went to wherever it was over the other side of town and picked it up. And then Paul, who lives in Geelong, came to me and actually picked his copy up. So he returned the favour. And then so the other night while we were recording, he actually dropped off my rule book. For the solo mode. So thanks so much for that, for doing that, Paul. And that's just another testament to the really cool gaming community we've got here. So that's going to be my new oath. My new oath is going to be that I'm going to play Loot of Lima and try the solo mode, which I'm super pumped to do because I love my deduction games. And funnily enough, I actually I sent Paul a message saying, oh, thanks, man. I can't come to the door right now because I'm in the middle of recording a podcast. By the way, Board Game Barbecue, check it out. And he replied, no need. I've been following you guys for ages. Keep up the great work. And I'm like, oh. And he goes, oh, I didn't realize it was that Dan that I was dropping it off the doorstep too. So shout out to Paul and our community. Thanks for all your support, mate. And thanks for getting my Loot of Lima solo mode.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, I'm like you, slack blokes. I swore to do two as last time because I was so excited to play both games, and I did them both. Actually, last night we did both one after the other, and that is Project L, like we spoke about earlier, and Aquatica, and they're both amazing games. We spoke about Project L before, and like I said, I used it to I had a couple of friends come over after we went out for dinner, and they said, yeah, we'll play a couple of board games. And the boyfriend was telling me afterwards, like, I was not looking forward to playing board games. I thought it was going to be so boring. I was prepared to have, like, a really boring rest of the night because I'm just being honest, but, man, was that fun. And he's a bit of, like, a visual guy. And so Project L really, like, I could see his eyes getting wider and just how much he was really loving it. And he's like, dude, this is amazing. I can just see what I need to do before I do it, and my brain is just going a million miles an hour. I'm like, oh, man, come over. We're going to get out a few games. We're going to get Baron Park, and we'll get out, Nova Lunar, I think he'll really like. So it was a really good introductory games. And Aquatica, played two-player with Renata last night, and, man, that's just such good combo goodness. It's so nice just slotting those cards into those slots, and it's just – so satisfying, and it's such a quick game. Like, I taught Renata last night, and I had to stop to check a couple of rules, and we played for 38 minutes, and the game was over. Like, there's not many games like that sort of size that you can play in 38 minutes. And man, Aquatica is a definite big win for me, and that's another one that I played once, like 6 months ago, and I've been dying to get my own copy ever since, and I finally got it. Looking forward to playing
that's
more.
That's why. I was wondering why, because I remember you sizzled it. Because
I think it was the first one that sizzled it. But
I remember looking at it going, I need that game, and I still haven't got it. But I just love the way that the cards slide up and sort of incrementally. Yeah, it's
great. I don't know if there's anything more satisfying in board games than sliding up one of those cards that allows you to do something and slide up maybe another card that allows you to do something. Just going, but it's great.
Combo-tastic.
All good combos. So good combos. But I'm getting the expansion soon, and the expansion's supposed to really take it up a next level and make it a lot more exciting as well. So I'm really looking forward to that. But that's my two oaths completed, Aquatica and Project L. And then I came into this room before we recorded, and I can't pick what to do next. Not because I don't have a choice. I got so many choices of what I want to pick. So I thought I'll let you guys decide for me. I narrowed it down to two. One I've had for a while, and it's from a game company that I absolutely love, and I should really have played this by now, and that's Ankh.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't played my Ankh yet, and so I want to play that. Or another game that you guys, maybe not you two specifically, but a bunch of our guys have rattled on about for a long time, and the theme really interests me, and I've wanted to try it for a long time, and I can play it solo, and that's Spirit Island. I got a copy of Spirit Island. So I thought I'd let you boys decide for me which one of those two I have to play by the time I'm on the pod next.
Look, I think it's hard. I think both are great choices, but I think you'd love Spirit Island.
Uh-huh. I was going to say Unk. Because remember, Unk was one of the games that I most wanted to play from this year. Yeah. I'd say, look, in the interest of the fact that Steve and I both have about four, why don't you just have both?
No. I did it before, and no.
That would be the right thing to do,
I think. What if I drag you in there? Yeah. What if we play Ankh?
Yeah?
That's anticipated for you. Why don't I drag you in on that, and that way I can blame you if I don't get it done, which works out great for me.
Yep.
But that makes us get together for a game day soon, and we can both play a game that we're both excited for.
That works.
Yeah, so I'm Michael Frugia. I swear to drag
Jan. I'm really spreading myself around. I got two with Jonathan. Now I got one with Mike as well.
But I'm closer, so it's fine.
Yeah.
To be clear, I'm in the clear here, right? I'm not taking on any more than I need to. Thank you for that, Mike.
Excellent. Yet. But you're going to be here in January, so I'll drag you into another oath by the time you're here. So we'll work on that together.
I'll gladly be part of your oath for that 5 days
I'm in Melbourne. Mike's additional oath is to make you an oath on a future oath.
Exactly.
Ken Oath. Love it.
Ken Oath.
I swear to teach you Project L when you're here.
Oh, that sounds great. I'll be up for that.
Done.
All right. Well, look, you're pretty quick show tonight. So thank you both to Delicious Dan and what did I go with you, Mike?
Mouth watering.
Mike. It was good at the start, but then I forgot. That's no good.
I didn't forget. That was great. Accurate.
That's right. But that will finish us up for this episode. Hopefully we'll see folks at the Sydney Game Day tomorrow if you're listening to this on the day it releases. Otherwise, thank you for coming to the Sydney Game Day, those who made the trip, and we'll catch up with more of you in Melbourne. But otherwise, we'll see you on the next episode, which will be episode 166. Cheers, guys. Thanks for the day.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Discord, or YouTube, and you can find all of those links in the show notes of this podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and here's hoping your next game is a sizzling one.